I just thought I'd let the drama build there for a second. You know, usually I pop right in, but full disclosure, I was checking something. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Swing Thoughts. Second big episode of the season. Full disclosure as well, we're recording this just the day. I don't know if we've ever done this. The day after the Masters. Exciting. There's Coach Tim. I'm Golf Spiritual Leader. And thank you so much for being here with us, especially you.
Maybe we should see how this goes. We should do an evaluation and postmortem, and maybe doing a episode the day after a major when it's fresh. Maybe that'll be part of our new routine. Who knows?
Dude, I love that idea. In fact, I would be open. I would be open in a spiritual way to even looking at this as a recording day.
Yeah, Mondays are good. Mondays,
yeah, because golf is fresh. I just watched a bunch of it on the weekend, obviously.
Yeah, a few of us did.
but not just majors. Like, I'm one of those guys. I don't have a lot going on, so I'm watching all those tournaments, elevated events and non-elevated events. I'm the guy turning on the TV at night going, is there an LPGA tournament from Asia that I can watch? Some of the LPGA...
Maybe there's an old Adams infomercial I could watch.
Yeah, exactly. It's Saturday morning sometimes before... Is there like a DP World Tour event? Hello, everyone.
Challenge event, at least.
Exactly. And then the fact that you know what a challenge event is shows me what a nerd you are. Hey, everybody, this program is brought to you by... Oh, there's the music. Hang on a second. Let me turn the music off. Okay? Sorry for yelling. All right, this program brought to you by TaylorMade. How about that? All those big, cool TaylorMade golf bags at Ye Olde Masters on the weekend. That was pretty cool. And I'm not sure if you've taken, remind me if you've taken delivery of your QI10 drivers.
Sadly, have not.
Okay. When you do, because I have them.
Where are they?
When you do, they have the same head covers as Scheffler, McIlroy, all these dudes that are playing TaylorMade. I saw them on the weekend. I'm like, I got that head cover. So far, that's cool. Out. It is far out. And of course, we'd like you to know that TaylorMade, the QI10 driver, experience TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. By the way, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to get that dude on from TaylorMade to explain what that is. Our buddy Jamie.
I don't know.
Yeah, when I say
28 years between us, we don't know what inertia is.
Well,
yet.
But do you know what 10K inertia is? I don't. The all new QI10 Max driver, only from TaylorMade. Learn more at TaylorMadeGolf.ca. Don't take my word for it. Listen to this. I say, listen to this.
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
There you go. That kind of explained it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my co-host and friend, the author of many books, including the soon-to-be published Getting Unstuck, Six Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. It is indeed Timothy O'Connor III. Hello, Timberly.
Hello, I haven't really kept count how many of Timothy O'Connors there are, but I do know that this spring I will be resplendent in my Oscar Bravo attire, polos that look amazing, and you know, just in case this is really important to you, that no one else at your club, at your course, will be wearing them because there's only 100 made of each polo each year, made of fine Italian fabric. And if you're really super interested in this club, in this polo, man, I was doing well.
You were doing great. You're still doing great.
Thank you. I'm going to practice acceptance and keep going. So if you want to check it out, whoisoscarbravo.com. Go to that place very soon.
Yes, go to a good place. And as we spoke a few weeks ago about this amazing place in Mexico that I got to hang out at, what happened?
The door closed. And so that's Freddie, my boxer's time to show that he's our security dog.
Was that him making that little noise?
That's him making that noise. For a big dog, he makes a little dog noise.
That's so great, barks. Man. I love that. I want to make sure I get this right. Hang on a second. It's secretlinks.golf. If you're interested in what we talked about a few weeks ago, then go to secretlinks.golf and find out about the most unique. You want, it's the Oscar Bravo of golf trips. Just know that. And go check it out. Book your it's not just a golf trip, it's going to be a trip of a lifetime.
Is it a golf experience?
Not just golf, though. It's an experience, and it's an adventure.
Yeah.
In the Mayan Riviera, PGA Riviera, Maya is one of the courses you'll play. Anyway, secretlinks.golf. All right. I'm heading out. That's one of the reasons we're doing the show the day after the Masters, is because this week I'm going on a road trip, which I've only ever done a couple times in my life. Like, I really, having just talked about secretlinks.golf, I think this will be maybe only my fourth or fifth sort of guys golf trip, and my very first time to Pinehurst. Parenthetically, the area, not the golf course. I've never been in this area. I've played golf in Myrtle Beach. I've also played golf in North Carolina, where I'm going. But I've never been to that Pinehurst area. You, on the other hand, have. What should I know about it?
It's kind of like, it strikes me, especially this time of year, it's kind of like Palm Springs. Every day, blue skies, puff of wind. It's like in the language the Americans use, it's, you know, 73, 74. It's just gorgeous. And of course, you know, as we saw, similar sort of flora and fauna. You've got obviously Pinehurst, you have pine trees. So it's just gorgeous. And that's where actually I learned that the best way to really present your front lawn is to cover it with pine needles. Everyone there, they don't bother with lawns, just pine needles.
I just started laughing because I'm like, wouldn't it be weird if someone listening went, wait a minute, that's why they call it Pinehurst, because of the pine trees?
Yeah, there you go.
But that's amazing. You asked me about a couple of golf courses. I'm not playing any of the famous courses for a variety of reasons. We didn't want this to be an expensive trip. We just wanted it to have a chance to go and play some golf in the spring, even though I was away all winter. I haven't played golf in almost 3 weeks now.
Ooh.
I know. We're teeing up in a couple of days. It'll be a day shy of 3 weeks since the last time I played. But also, I'm not a big believer in that whole, what do they call it? Like, sort of celebrity golf course things. Like, I've played St. Andrews and I've played Prestwick, but I haven't played like any of the other famous courses. Never played Pebble Beach. Have you?
No, I haven't played Pebble, but I will sort of grab on to kind of what you're saying about a trip where you play a bunch of famous courses. I have done that because as a journalist, I would go on these junkets. I'd be taken all, you know, to all over the place. And you play, you know, like, you know, on Monday, this famous course.
What are some of the courses you got to play?
Like in Myrtle Beach, I played pretty well every one of the high level courses there. TPC, True Blue, Caledonia. Okay.
But
so you go down there on a trip like that and you play these, you know, amazing golf courses. I've played TPC,
Sawgrass?
You know, Sawgrass, etc. But when you play them back to back to back to back, you don't get really a chance to really absorb them and really take them in and appreciate them. That's, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Because it's just, kind of too much going on besides, you know, where's my golf ball?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that.
But so. I've never played Pebble. I've never played Pinehurst. I mean, I played, Doral before Trump took it over. And by the way, I've got a Trump tie-in when we start talking about the Masters. But I'll just say, for me, to play Pinehurst number two, I don't know what it is, U.S. I've heard it's like $500, $600, $700.
Yeah, it's in that Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
It's in that Pebble Beach category.
To me, it's not worth it. Like, our whole trip, you know, isn't costing us much more than that. It's one of those things, a package you book at the accommodations and the golf. And, yep. And that's one of the reasons we took it, because it's a reasonable amount of money. And again, we're not playing. I mean, to me, going to Cabot Links, way worth it, even though it's a little on the expensive side. This thing in Mexico, way worth it. Even though the famous courses aren't famous, the experience is well worth it. To me, to go to Pinehurst and drop... here's the problem with spending $600 in a round of golf. For me, at least. I would just be... Could the experience... what am I trying to say? You would be expecting so much out of the experience. Could it live up to it? I would spend that much money or more. Actually, go ahead, finish. I'm going to ask you a question.
Well, I don't know. When you get the opportunity to play an amazing golf course. So I played TPC at Sawgrass, like all the famous courses in Ireland. The most I ever enjoyed one of those courses, so I played the old course at Ballybunion. I probably played it half a dozen times. The most I ever appreciated it is when photographer Doug Ball and I walked the back nine backwards, and he was kind of scouting it to take pictures of it. And being high up on the dunes and walking around and not, you know, not caring, like, you know, why come my backswing's not working? And how come I've three putted the last three holes? When you're not immersed in your own game, you just see the course. I just appreciated it so much. And I kind of, maybe if there's golf course hikes or something.
Yeah, I don't think the people at Pebble Beach are like, well, it's $800 to play the course, but it's only $80 if you want to just hike around.
Yeah, but you get to hang out to a yellow rope and eat Oreo cookies. But I did hike. I did hike, if you will, the old course at St. Andrews on a Sunday.
Yeah,
shared it with people and their babies with the parents.
No, I know. It's crazy. I played the old course. And when I played it, it was 80 pounds back in the 1900s.
Oh, this is before the business people discovered golf.
But even now, it's not as expensive as Pebble Beach. So before we get to the Masters, and I was going to say, I would spend, this is the question I'll ask you. What would you spend... I know you had a chance to play Augusta, and then it got rained out. Sad story from last week's episode.
I was almost over.
See, to me, I would spend, I don't know, probably a couple thousand U.S. to play Augusta.
Hmm. Yeah. I could. If you know, that's a bucket list thing. That's a thing to do, you know, in your life, to be able to play. I sound like Vern Lundquist. In your life. I could see that. But I couldn't. But I don't know. You'd have to. I don't know. I'm not in that income level where I could make any kind of relevant comment about the value of playing.
Right. But as a fantasy, as an imagination or a thought experiment, like, is there a golf course, like, let's say we're talking about Augusta, that you'd be like, okay, I would go into my RRSPs if somebody said, like, there's a certain number where beyond that I'd be like, forget it. It's not nothing's worth that much.
Yeah, I guess the only course really would be Augusta, would be the only one. I mean, it's been so long since I've been on some of those trips. I forget some of the courses I played, and I played some pretty good courses, you know. Yeah. But yeah, Augusta National too to experience that, yeah, that'd be worth, yeah, why not, if you could make the relevant argument with your dearly beloved.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that conversation with Mrs. O'Connor would be like, okay, she'd be like, well, but I think even Sandy, who is fiscally responsible, would get the idea that, you know, you're a chance to play an actual round there. I think for me would be the only place, like, I wouldn't spend that much money to play Pebble Beach. And again, I played Prestwick, I played Carnoustie, I played St. Andrews, and they were great, but it wasn't like, I wouldn't have to do it again. All right, let's turn our attention to the 88th Masters Tournament. Talked a little bit about it on the Humble and the Fred show earlier today. And overall, I enjoyed it. I watched a lot of it. You know, I've got lots to say about it. I'm sure you do as well. What would your sort of opening remarks be about the what we just witnessed?
I don't know. It's always, yes, Scottie Scheffler, amazing golfer. You know, the guy knows how to play golf really well. And it was really cool to watch that. But I always just like the experience of watching it on Sunday and just drinking it in as so I was on my couch at 1:58. I was going to miss 1 second of it. And there was times in which I'm tired. I could not. No. Stay in the course for this, because I just didn't want to miss. I didn't want to miss any of it, and I just love the aerial views of the course. I love the little memory bits that they have, particularly with Vern Lundquist and the maybe, yes sir, and all that stuff. I just love all that stuff, and so just from an experience for the Masters, because as we discussed last week, I covered 7 of them, so. Once you've been there and you have a, like, and, you know, I was there a lot, you get a good sense of the place. Now in a place where I can just really kind of really appreciate it. So I've got a lot of really cool memories. And I think for a lot of people, you know, Sunday at home watching the Masters, it's just a fun tradition. And you just, you know, when Jim Nantz looks in and, you know, welcome a tradition like any other.
Yeah, when he says, when Jim Nantz says, hello, friends, I go, hello, Jim. Hello, my Jimmy. All of that. Yeah. I watch, you know, maybe I watch more of the coverage than the average person, but I watched parts of every day, and Sunday is always a big day. I mean, you know, all the Vern Lundquist stuff was great, and the coverage is great. The fact that there's not many commercials is cool, and and they're very, you know, it's very respectful and austere, and there's no running on the grounds. Here's a fun match. I forgot to write this down. I'm gonna tell. I forgot. I was going to talk to Fred about this. Do you know what CBS? I'm gonna write the $0. Do you know what CBS pays Augusta to for the broadcast rights?
I do not know.
Zero.
Really?
Yeah. That's how crazy this whole. I read this whole thing about all these Masters facts. One of them is CBS, and I guess it's ESPN, pays zero to Augusta for the rights to broadcast the Masters. Why? So that those button-down white men can have absolute control over what's being said, how it's being shot. They have more control than... Like, you think about what the rights to that tournament would be worth if they wanted.
Yeah.
But that's sort of, I would say, a microcosm of the kind of broadcast it is and why it's so different. You know, did you notice they did something this year? Maybe they started it last year where they don't say, you know, they don't call it the range. They call it the tournament practice area.
I didn't pick that up. No,
they don't call it the grandstands or the stands. They call it the, I don't know, patron viewing whatever the fuck it was like. All right, easy there, old white people. The patron viewing stands or whatever. So, but I think all of it sort of adds, as I said, to, you know, the what is being shown and the way it's being shown.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They, I don't know that there was any real controversy this year. But in past years, something would happen and then they wouldn't talk about it. And I go, well, how come they're not looking at this?
Yeah.
You know, I do wish, though, they had replayed, how do you say his name? The guy, the poor fella from Denmark. Hogard? Is that how you say
Nikolai,
his name?
Nikolai, oh yeah, the...
his opening drive in the Tracer. You never saw that thing again.
No. Well, you texted me. I thought that was pretty funny. The opening Tracer, it was so squiggly. He toe hooked it into the left trees, but the way the Tracer was, it almost got confused. Like the AI got confused, and I said to Tim, "It looked like somebody did that by hand. It was like they were hand drawing the path of his golf ball. It was so fucked up." But anyway, I asked Fred this question, and I'm going to ask the question to you as well. In the context of Scottie Scheffler, and I'm going to get to his numbers in a second. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's all this talk online about, you know, he's sort of, you know, not the most exciting superstar, whatever. And I said to Fred, who's covered sports for years, like yourself, I said, do we need our sports stars to not only be proficient, but do they have to be personalities?
I'd say absolutely not. I mean, one of the reasons why they can perform at that level is they're able to contain themselves. This is their business. That's part of what golf is. I remember Richard Zokel saying to me, you know, former PGA Tour player, that you don't let yourself get too high, you don't get too low. And you have to keep in that sort of that middle area. But no, I mean, and if you look through golf history, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, when they're playing, these guys are masters, they're all masters champions and won multiple majors. They wouldn't be called colorful personalities, mm-hmm. not by any stretch.
Great point,
so,
by the
no,
way. Great
point. I just think it's kind of it's kind of a cop-out for people who don't have anything smarter to say about golf to criticize some of these guys.
Well, and I also think, and I agree, that's a great point about Nicklaus and Faldo. They weren't, you know, great interviews at the time. I mean, Faldo, that's the whole story about, you know, the story how he transformed himself into a human
exactly.
being. But during his playing days, he was a robot.
Yeah.
As was
so just quick, I just interject for a second.
Okay.
He transformed. He allowed that part of himself
no,
to come
okay,
out, finally.
But that was more of a joke, really.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, he's like all of a sudden he became a human after his six major championships and 20 years of being a robot golfer. No, I know. So, and then it's a great point about that you made. The thing is, we were spoiled by the... You know, the once in a generational, the last quarter century up till 5 years ago, you know, we had Tiger Woods, who was not only the best player in golf by a shit ton, but he was one of the most well-known, exciting athletes in any sport on the earth. You know, and then there was a, you know, so there's always this ebb and flow in golf. I mean, you know, Greg Norman, for all, you know, think about whatever you think about him now, he was a pretty exciting figure in golf for quite some time. Didn't win that much. I mean, didn't win majors, but so I think it's unfair to want more from Scottie Scheffler. And I don't mean just on the golf course, just as a guy. As I said to Fred, who doesn't really know who Scottie Scheffler is, I said, he's putting up Tiger-like numbers. The guy hasn't shot over par since last August. Like, his last four tournaments are win-win, miss a playoff by one shot, second, and win.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you want from from your golfer, because he is by far the best player in the game.
Yeah, they don't have to be the most colorful, charismatic, articulate person. I mean, that, you know, those people are really rare. And actually, those are the people who become those are the guys who were fighters in the NHL who became analysts. Those guys. But yeah, most of them don't really talk well. They always say, I played good, when they really mean to say, I played well.
Yeah.
So it's just every once in a while. I remember as when I was a journalist, you would just love it when Colin Montgomery was in contention, Peter Jacobson, Payne Stewart. These guys could really talk, and they were fun. But you know, think of Tiger, for God's sakes, when he was in the press room.
Terrible interview.
He was vanilla. And the majority of them are.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about just, but like, we were spoiled because Tiger Woods was an electric human being and a figure for all his faults and whatever. I'm saying, like,
yeah,
Scottie Scheffler is more like what most golfers are like. Pretty even keeled, good old kid, you know. I think his golf is exciting. And I mean that. Like, you think about some of the shots he hit on the weekend, and that's as exciting. I mean, on Saturday when he made a couple of sloppy bogeys there in the back nine, and then he eagles 13, like, that's exciting. I mean, again, okay, as I was trying to explain to Fred, for someone that loves the game and watches it the way I do, the way you do, that's all I need. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't cheering for him. You know, I wanted Max Homa to win, who played great.
Yep.
This kid, Ludwig, I mean, he's not only an amazing player, I love the way he plays. He just gets up, takes a look, and hits it. Like, absolutely, a lot of us would benefit from the way he goes about the game.
I'm glad you noticed that, too, because he just gets over the ball, bam, lets it go. I love that. He really pulls the trigger quickly. And, I was pulling for Homa as well. Just think, Homa needs to just be in contention a little bit more.
Yep.
To dial it in, particularly his putting. He didn't make many birdies, and you got to do that.
And he got a really, you know, he was so funny. He, in his interview after the round, because he got a terrible break.
Oh, that was
on
horrible.
12.
Yep.
And he said something like, hey, I'm going to be honest, that really stung. That was a terrible break. He said, the professional in me is supposed to say, well, that's how it goes sometimes. He goes, but sort of like, I got screwed, kind of. And he did.
Yep.
Because lots of shots in the exact same area, hit there, come back down, you get up for par, the worst you're making is bogey. And that double bogey really did something. You know, it just took him out of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, all day Saturday, I watched guys airmail that green, and, you know, bounce and go, and then the ball would hit up on that hill and roll back. And it didn't happen to him. It got caught up in that... the ground cover, if you will.
Which I don't know that I can remember. I was kind of surprised. I'm like, I didn't even realize that was an option. But nevertheless, I would say for me overall, I really enjoyed it. I think Scottie Scheffler is playing as good a golf as anyone has played in a long time. Like, seeing it now. Like, he's on track to win 6 or 7 times. That hasn't happened in so long. Plus, you know, there's that. I wanted to get your thoughts on the underlying kind of LIV versus the PGA Tour, and you know, I miss some of those guys. I do. I miss John Rahm, and I think Cam Smith is great, and DeChambeau is a character. And as much as I hate Brooks Koepka, he's a really good golfer.
Yes,
but other than those guys, and maybe a couple that I'm forgetting. I don't care if I ever see Joaquin Niemann play. I don't give a shit about him. Same with Phil. I don't ever have to see Phil Mickelson play again.
I know.
But that you do miss those guys. Those are sort of the 4 or 5 guys that are just, you know, Rahm, Cam Smith, DeChambeau, and Koepka. That's a pretty good chunk of PGA Tour superstardom that you're not going to see again until the PGA.
Yeah. What was interesting to me about this Masters is the whole LIV versus PGA Tour thing, it wasn't as much of a big story. I did think it was funny that Fred Couples put a text out saying, hey, couldn't you LIV guys buy Greg Norman
a ticket? No, I know. Isn't that great? How does hilarious. Greg Norman have to, how do, what does that say about those other players? Nobody of his, because they all get 8 tickets. None of those guys wanted to, you know, throw a ticket Norman's way?
I thought that was really funny. But I don't know. It's funny. I sent an email out to some clients today, and somebody sent back today. He said, you know what? He said, those live guys, they all tend to be whiny complainers. And that was some that wasn't as much there. But, you know, Rom with his F-bombs on Friday. I know that certain people have come around on Bryson. I just, you know, I'm going to hang on to my projections. He's just, I don't know. I get all tense and cranky when I watch him. Like, yeah. Just watching him putt, that makes me tense. It's all right.
I'll just quickly tell you, I've softened on him a little bit, mainly since he dropped the Ben Hogan hat, which I thought looked stupid on him. I mean, there's no getting around the fact the guy's an awesome talent. Rory's a tough guy.
But he always acts like, oh, it's so unfair.
No, I know.
You know, I hit the shot and didn't go where it went.
And the announcers have got to stop calling him the professor. Every time I hear them do it, I want to puke. I'm like, okay, we get it. He has a degree.
I know he's smart.
The thing about Rory, here's my one line on Rory, because you know, you want to cheer for the guy, but he never seems to do the special thing when the special thing is required. At least there. Like, Rory wins tournaments. He hasn't won a major in 10 years. But it's like he just never has that thing where a special moment, a breakthrough, a thing, a chip in. Like, Rom has it. Rom has it. Scheffler has it. Even DeChambeau has it. That shot he canned on...
On Saturday.
Like, yeah. And yeah, listen, you could argue there's lots of highlights from Rory's career that are those special things. But lately, it seems that just when you would be like, hey, go on a couple of birdies, make an eagle, he just doesn't do it.
He kind of reminds me of late in the career Tiger, when Tiger seemed to go to a new swing coach every year. So Rory now has been seeing Butch Harmon. So a lot of the story now is that I think Rory was doing something with his right arm, keeping it something. I forget. I didn't read the piece. But I just think that Rory is just getting into his... He's gone searching for things outside of himself when, you know, just be Rory. Just like, you're amazing. I don't know. I don't know the guy, but...
You don't know him?
Just
swing thought nerds. Tim does not know Rory. Because if you did...
Really?
Wait, if you did know Rory, and he hasn't been on our show, I'd question your dedication to this. If you could have gotten Rory on in season 4, we could have done something with this thing. Anyway, you don't know Rory, but...
Well, to me, I'm always conscious of making judgments about, you know, I saw Rory hit golf balls once, you know, 10 feet away from me on a range at a Nike event, but I don't know him. And that, to me, is the problem with trying to understand what goes on in athletes' heads. We don't know. But it just, to your point, it just doesn't seem that he plays as maybe as freely as he once did. And that just, I don't know, maybe just hangs onto the putter a little bit more. Or it just doesn't get released or something. And that's what I was thinking about Homa. There's just some freedom in that. There's a little bit of more freedom when a player is just more comfortable of being in that arena of high competition.
Again, what we've learned is that you don't know Rory. Although if you did, you should have gotten him to write the foreword to your book. we don't know what's going on in Rory's head. And you know, just a couple quick things before we go. This won't be quick. I said this on the show today, so it's fresh in my head. Mike Weir had a nice couple of days there. He played okay. Didn't make the cut, but he had a couple of highlight moments. I think he made eagle on 13, first round, second round, whatever it was. It bugs me as a Canadian. And, you know, that's what I said to Freddie. I said, I know it sounds like I'm a homer, but In the 88 years of this golf tournament, you know, this golf is filled with stats. It's like baseball. It's this milestone, and this guy was the first to do this, the youngest to blah, blah, blah. They do that all the time. And yet, the first left-hander to win the freaking tournament was Mike Weir, and I don't think that gets played up enough. What do you think?
It doesn't strike anything in me at all.
What does your friend Rory? What does your friend Rory say about that?
He says there's lots of left-handers, especially Canada.
But no, up until 2003, a left-hander never won the thing.
Well, if it was an American left-hander, then it would have been a big deal. But it's an everything.
This is what I mean.
Yes, and so if the sun doesn't shine out of America's orifice, they don't talk about it.
They talk about Phil 1-3, Bubba 1-2, they're left-handers.
It's all about America, man.
But you would just think, and it's not, again, I preface it by saying it's a sport that's especially there, filled with reflection and statistics and perspective and, you know, records that have been broken, etc. Tiger Woods, 24 cuts in a row. And yet, anyway, so that's one thing that bugged me.
They don't talk about the first German, Bernard Langer, to win.
Yeah,
they don't talk about, you know, Ian Woosnam, the first guy under 5'6" to win.
Great point. Although, you know, I think part of that is we're trying to downplay the Germans for a while. Anyway, so they have a lot of firsts. Anyway. It's funny you say that because this morning, Fred was telling a story about something that he did. Him and Dan were on a trip years ago to some resort, and they were talking about Fred. Fred was getting annoyed at the behavior of some of the German tourists to this resort. And I said, well, what was bothering you? He said, well, you know, they did this, they were obnoxious and they were pushy and they were, you know, every morning they would get up early and take, you know, put towels on the lounge chairs so that no one else would get them. And I said, let me get this straight. So they're obnoxious, they're pushy, they're entitled. I said, still got you beat. I said, you know, if that's the word, listen, we would have taken obnoxious. Anyway, that's a little jokey joke for you golfers. The other thing that bothers me, and they, you know, they have the honorary starters. It's Nicholas and Gary Player, who I just find obnoxious, and Tom Watson. I don't know if you saw this as a journalist, but about 3 weeks ago at whatever golf course, Trump, Bedford, or one of those stupid courses, Bedminster, I think it's called. There was a ceremony where Trump and his cult people gathered around so that he could receive his latest club championship trophy that he claims to have won. Now, he's so full of shit. We all know he's a super cheater. Rick Riley wrote a great book I read called Commander in Cheat.
Yeah, exactly. I read sections of that book.
So we all know that Trump didn't shoot the scores. In fact, in one of the rounds at the club championship, he didn't even play on the day of the tournament. He played earlier in the week with some friends because he had to be out of town on that Saturday. So his score counted. Anyway, bottom line is, there's a picture of the great Jack Nicklaus handing Trump the trophy. And to be honest with you, I already knew that Nicklaus was a Trump supporter, but it's one thing to sort of support him. You know, whatever, you can do that. But when it comes to golf, I was really disappointed with Nicklaus because he's an honorable guy and it's an honorable sport. And he fucking knows that that guy didn't win that trophy and he gave it to him anyway. I was just like, I don't know. It's just disappointing.
No, I'm right with you there. One thing you can't get around is that the overwhelming majority of PGA Tour players and people from that world are Republican. They're hard right people. And so I don't know. I just think that you know, as much as we might like Wyndham Clark, he's not my favorite guy when you really hear what he believes in and whatnot. And so I don't know. It's that's part of the problem with being in a niche. Is I remember that was part of the thing I didn't like about being a journalist. Is every once in a while I would get to meet some of the, particularly when I was a music critic, I'd meet some of these people and I'd go like, "Aw, I don't like this person." And because this is, it's a much different thing to be someone who's, you know, a performer. In essence, that's what Jack Nicklaus and these guys are. Mm-hmm. They're performers, they're entertainers, they're sports people. And, you know, you could get into that whole thing of whether there's a, you know, what did Barclay say? Don't hold me up to be a model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're people. And so every once in a while, they make, these people make you squirm. And
well,
so, yeah, I'm right with you there. I remember when I first read or heard that Nicklaus was a Trump guy, I went, oh, really? Come on.
Well, and again, you know, same with Bobby Orr, one of my childhood heroes. During the last election, you know, he took out an ad supporting Trump, and I was like, okay. But it's one thing to do that, because that's everyone's prerogative, as bizarre as it sounds. But in the world of golf, Jack Nicklaus knows in his bones... He knows that that's bullshit, and yet he found himself in that situation and went along with it, even though everyone around him knows that that was cheated. There's no way Trump wins. It's like Kim Jong-un, or Ill, whatever.
Exactly, 100%.
He's with his 18 holes in one. It's just so sad, really. Anyway, that was one of my takeaways. And you brought it up at the beginning of this segment, which we're about to wrap up, which was one of the... one of the highlights, I think, for a lot of us that have been watching this for a long time was the way they treated the retirement of Vern Lundquist.
Yep.
83-year-old man. And there's a great picture. You can go look it up. A great video of Tiger when he finishes his round yesterday. He finishes 16. Goes over to behind the tree, because that's where Vern was broadcasting from, because at his age now, he can't get up in that tower. So he was sitting on a chair behind the tree to the right of the green, I think. And Tiger comes over and has a word with him and shakes his hand. It was very, very sweet.
Yeah, I saw that this morning. I was, but, you know, I didn't know, in fact, that he was sitting on a chair behind a tree. It kind of makes sense because, I wondered, he can't be getting in that tower. How does he get up there? They need a special crane or something. So that's kind of weird. But anyways,
I thought the same thing. I'm like, how are they getting him up there? Because he's an old fella. He talked about that on one of the live froms that, you know, he had some back surgery and here's what he said. We figure something out. So that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. But I forget where I read it this morning, but he just, he was a guy who could capture the moment and just didn't talk so damn much.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed the image to speak for itself. And he just punctuated it just by being a fan. You know, like when Nicklaus had that putt on 17, you know, the maybe. He's just like the rest of us watching this thing, hoping this thing goes in. And Jim Nantz does the same thing really well. That putt of Scheffler's on 9. When that started to trundle down the hill, it looked like it was going in, and
the second shot.
Nance was like cheering for it to go in.
Yeah,
great, it's fine, you know.
I mean,
I just find that the economy of a guy like Lundquist just punctuated it just economically.
That shot on 9 wasn't what you said, putt. It was his second shot that looked like it was gonna.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Vern Lundquist, you got to figure like. I agree with what you're saying. He's been a broadcaster a long time. And there was a great piece on him on one of the Golf Channel shows, the Live from the Masters. And Rich Lerner, who I also think is a great broadcaster.
Oh, absolutely he is. Yep.
Is he a friend of yours? Because I'm gonna keep asking now.
No, I have a friend who's a friend of Rich Lerner's.
I've actually met Rich. I met Rich... because I was friends with a producer of the Golf Channel, and I went to visit the Golf Channel when I was in Orlando once and met Rich and then had him on the Humble and Fred show a couple times.
Oh, cool.
But this is going to be my new running gag. Is he a friend of yours? Because if it turns out Rory is a friend of yours and you've been hiding that. Anyway, Rich Lerner, who I think is one of the best broadcasters, I think he's fantastic. And one of the reasons I watch that show live from whatever is because the way, and so he interviewed Vern.
And wish I saw it.
It's so good. Go, if you can go find it, it was fantastic. Yeah. And talked about Vern's career, how he came to be in the, how he came to golf, because he'd done lots of other stuff, ABC, football, and he's had, and Vern or Lerner quoted a bunch of other sports where he's had sort of great calls. But the one with Nicholas, as you've referenced, he asked Vern, which one do you think is the bigger moment? And Vern said, you know, between Tiger's chip in at 16 and that one, he said they're kind of like 1 and 1A.
Exactly. Yeah.
But imagine his place just happening to be the guy when both of those things happen. It's like Gary Koch on 17 at TPC. You know, better than most. Just the way he, you have to be in that situation. It's like amazing that those things happen to those guys.
Yeah, and but they also have to be, they draw on this experience. The thing that I think a lot of people don't, I didn't realize that most of these guys that you hear broadcasting games and whatnot, not the Jim Nances of the world, I don't think, but a lot of those guys, after the weekend's over, they go back to being a TV guy somewhere, you know, anchor of, you know,
or the New sports York guy, sports station, the sports director or a radio at some place. Guy.
They've got so much experience. So a guy like Vern, especially in TV, he knows the picture tells the story, and he led it. And I think that's what was so good about him. He just didn't get in the way. That's, I just find that so annoying with particularly a lot of American broadcasters. They just talk too damn much. But Vern just had the experience to know, when to jump in and when to let the picture tell the story.
Not only that, he had just a crazy, he's got such a great voice.
Oh, yeah.
And such a great voice for that. Let's wrap this up and tell everyone that any day now, getting unstuck, six transformational practices for golf nerds is going to be released unto the world. And since we didn't spend much time, if at all, on the mental side of golf, although I think what we could see from the except for Terrell Hatton, who I'm so sick of, sick of his fucking whiny act. Although,
yeah, a live guy.
But you look at the way professionals act.
Yep.
And how they react. I think that's a big lesson from this last weekend for all of us. That the way, even Tiger shooting 82, like how impressive was that? That just because he didn't make it, he never blinked. You'd never know what he was shooting that day. And I think that's probably, as far as a mental game goes, for me, the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's one reason why I just react viscerally when I watch Bryson. It's just like, it just seems so petulant. Come on, be a professional. You know, and it's the same when I see a lot of these guys and the things that they talk about. What when you watch Scheffler, it didn't matter whether he he had that bobble in the midway through the round on Saturday. He looked a little down, but there was no slamming clubs or looking up at the sky. And then when good things happen to him, you know, such as that approach shot on 9, there was another, was it 14 or 17 that he stuffed it?
Yeah, that was pretty
cool. Like, you just roll with it. And so, speaking mentally, I think that's what you got to do in golf, is you just kind of roll with it. And a guy like him is just, he just seems to be so grounded. And I think part of it that helped that is, you know, knowing his wife's going to give birth to his first kid, and the stuff that's important. Winning the Masters, I mean, that's amazing. But I think that when people have other parts of their lives that keep them grounded.
Yeah, absolutely.
That helps them big time.
Yeah, and I heard his caddy being caddy, or Kim being caddied. I heard his caddy being caddied, being interviewed after. It sort of helps, too, that Like Ted Scott, that guy's been around the game. He's caddied for Bubba Watson for two Green Jackets.
He's won four Masters.
Four
that
Masters.
Caddy.
And the way he was talking about how good Scottie Scheffler is, that also helps ground you. Like Scottie Scheffler knows that he has this inner peace that the way he hits a golf ball, he's going to wear everyone down. Thank you very much to Tim O'Connor, author of Getting Unstucked. Six Transformations in Golf Nerds at O'ConnorGolf.ca. And of course, Humble and Fred Radio. And we want to thank, as always, SecretLinks.golf and Oscar Bravo and our title sponsor. Go get that QI10. It looks pretty sexy. TaylorMadeGolf.ca. We'll see you next week, everybody. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time.